Jeff, I could do a whole series of guests for this podcast called interns I've worked with who have gone on to become a big, big deal.
That would be interesting.
It could be. And we're going to lead it off with Sean Walsh. So Sean is a former intern of mine who went on to become the director of communications and media relations for the Daily Mail.
So is this the same Daily Mail where on social media I'll see like puppy videos?
A lot of puppy videos, but a lot of Kardashians. I know that's your go-to source for Kardashian news. But the weird thing about Daily Mail is you all also get the breaking news of the day, a lot of political coverage next to the puppy videos, and it's kind of like a clearinghouse of all things pop culture.
So if you want to like smorgasbord,
it is a smorgasbord. Yeah, big time smorgasbord, and it is huge. They have 240 million readers around the world.
That's a lot.
Day.
Wow,
it's huge.
Would you consider this legitimate journalism or is this tabloid journalism?
You know, I have heard people refer to it as journalism crack, you know, because it's kind of addictive, but informative. And actually, we get into a really good conversation about 10 minutes into the podcast with Sean about this, because the way they gather news is wildly different than the way we do. And they also are really in tune with what people want to read, especially in that format. And we also talk a lot about that, because let me tell you, what a lot of our viewers say that they want from us isn't necessarily what they're clicking for online. We get into that and a whole lot more with one of my favorite interns, Sean Walsh, also known as Aussie Sean. Have you ever wondered, how did they do that? I'm talking about the art of the follow-through. I'm Deirdre Fitzpatrick, and Dying to Ask is the podcast that gets me off a TV news set and into candid conversations with authors, entrepreneurs, and influencers I have been dying to talk to. So brace yourself. This is a verbal gut check about what it takes to go from idea to reality. And who knows, maybe along the way, you'll get some answers to questions you've been dying to ask. Sean Walsh, welcome to the Dying to Ask podcast.
Thank you for having me, Deirdre.
Actually, no. My Australian friend is here. I should have said, Aussie.
Oi, oi, oi.
Do you know what that is, Jeff?
I have no idea.
That is the Australian cheer. That's how cool Australia is. Explain to him what the Aussie cheer is.
So when you're at sporting events, you will hear Australians calling out, Aussie, 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 and then everyone calls out, oi, oi, oi. That's our kind of national cheer.
Is that kind of like USA?
It's exactly like USA.
Except that it's kind of more fun, truthfully.
It's a lot of fun.
You can use it almost anywhere. And if you're anywhere in the world and you are chatting with somebody, you realize they're from Australia and you do that, even if you do it across a crowded room, they will do it back.
Someone will do it back. It doesn't matter where you are. If you hear it, someone will respond.
You have to. Well, it is really good to see you. We go way, way back actually to the 2000 Sydney Olympics. You were working for NBC.
That's
correct.
Were
you an intern for the Olympics?
No, I was working as a news assistant or news associate, I think they called it, on the Today Show and Nightly News. And Deirdre and I were in the same newsroom because remember they had the newsroom split up. There was NBC Network and then NBC affiliate, and you were doing all of the Hearst reporting.
That's right.
And I was basically running between two shows, the Today Show and Nightly News, doing all of their grunt work.
And on the Olympic totem pole, I was down at the very bottom of that pole.
Not at all. She was the star of the newsroom.
No, but here's the funny thing. So you and I got, I remember we were, I think it was in the lunchroom, and we just start chatting, and it comes up that I live in Sacramento, and he says, I'm coming to Sacramento. I'm going to be going to Sac State. And I said, well, you should come do an internship with us.
That
and
was it.
And you did.
And we did. It worked beautifully, and we became friends. And I was here, 2001, from July 2001 to December 2001. And we had a phenomenal time. Like, this is one of the greatest memories of my life is the 6 months that I spent here. And it's so great being back here 17 years later.
You were known as probably the most aggressive intern we ever had. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's very rare that people go, I remember, you know, intern so-and-so. People remember intern Sean, Aussie Sean, as we called you. Because from the get-go, you knew what you wanted. You were willing to work hard. And you were not shy about telling people what it is you wanted to do. Were you always like that?
I don't know. I think that I just was so excited to be here. And I think when you up and relocate from where you live, you really want to put in the hard yards to make it work, because what's the point of leaving your comfort zone?
We're going to do this a lot. You want to put in the what?
Hard yards.
The hard yards. What's a hard yard?
The hard work. You want to do the hard work to get to where you want to be. And you don't want to go back and have been a failure. You want to succeed. You want to have it work. And you also, you took a risk on getting me an internship here. So the last thing I want to do is let you down and not do the job properly while I'm here.
Well, you did. You did a, what would you say, a bang-up job?
A ripper job.
A ripper job. You did a ripper job. And you've gone on to some really cool things in journalism. I know you went into, you worked for Network News in Australia after we met. You've done all kinds of things. But the job you have right now is, I think, fascinating.
I love the job that I have right now.
You're the Director of Communications for Daily Mail.
That's correct. Here in, I'm based in New York City. So it's a great job. And I am honored to get to tell the Daily Mail story every day, and that's what I get paid to do, and I couldn't be more thankful for that job.
So Daily Mail, for people who are not aware of it, is the most read newspaper in the world.
Well, newspaper website. So
newspaper website.
It's one of the biggest newspapers in the United Kingdom. That's where it started nearly 130 years ago. And then back at the late 2000s, it went online. And since that time, it has grown to be the most read newspaper website in the world. It has 240 million unique visitors every month, and 80 million of those come from here in the United States. So we love our American audience, and we love that they visit dailymail.com, and there are people that just get all of their news from there, and that's what we'd like everyone to do. If you're not watching, say, we're here in Sacramento, if you're not getting your news from KCRA, then you need to be going online to dailymail.com or do both.
I would say both is a good idea.
I think that's right.
Here's the thing I love about Daily Mail, though. Daily Mail is like going to, I hope this doesn't offend you, it's like going into a super Walmart, because you can get tires, you can get baby clothes, you can buy some broccoli, and you can probably go get your hair done in the corner. You can get everything there. It's not like you guys only do one kind of news. You have a little bit of everything on it.
Everything.
Everything.
We get
and
that
a lot
people
of weird
want
stuff
the
too.
Lot. Everything. Like, you name it, we've got it. I mean, we get that people want hard news. We also know that they want celebrity. People want to see what Kim Kardashian's doing. Even if you don't like Kim Kardashian, you want to see what she's doing. And don't say you don't, because I see the analytics and people are looking at what Kim Kardashian's doing. But they also want to see what's going on in the White House. They want to know about that, like a huge motorway accident. They want to know about politics. They want to know about health, science, and we cover it all. And that's what's great about it, is it's a one-stop shop for news, and anything you want to read about, you can find there.
To me, Daily Mail is like, it's a guilty pleasure to me. I've told you this. I am on it all day long. You can scroll endlessly. And like you said, like, you go from something about a Kardashian to something happening at the White House to like really weird random stuff happening in the middle of Arkansas. Like, it goes on and on. How many stories are you guys churning out every day?
We publish around 1,600 stories a day. We do 16,000 photos a day. And then we do 1,300 videos a day. So there is so much content. Like, you will never get bored visiting dailymail.com. I can promise you that.
Where do you get all this information from?
Everywhere. So we break our own exclusive stories, which we're very, very good at. I've got to give our exclusive teams props for that. It's run by a lady by the name of Candace Trunzo and a guy by the name of Hugh Doherty. They're both brilliant at their jobs, and they break all the fantastic American exclusives that get picked up by everyone else. Like, we're really, really proud of those. And then we do a lot of looking at other sources. So a lot of reporting on other people's reporting as well. So we bring all that together. That's called aggregation. And so we do a lot of small town newspapers, major papers, we look at their stories, and then we bring them to life on the Daily Mail.
Can we talk about that? Because everybody does aggregation now. It's not like you guys are the only ones doing this.
Everybody.
Is that good, in your opinion? I mean, in some ways, sometimes it's tough to find, and I say this of all of us, it's tough to figure out, like, where does a story really start sometimes?
Well, you know, we are really super focused on crediting where the story came from originally. So you'll always find in a Daily Mail story that if we have found the story somewhere else, we will say, as reported by KCRA in Sacramento, and then we will link back to the original reporting. So not only can you read our story, you can also go back and click on the source and see where the original content came from. So we're super focused on making sure that we do that. And so that way, you know where the story began and the story ended.
And to be fair, we all do that.
Absolutely.
Every news website shares a story on social media is, in effect, doing that as well.
Well, look at the success of Drudge Report.
Mm-hmm.
he's the original person that started doing that. So Matt Drudge's website links back to all the other websites that are breaking great stories. And so if you take a look at Drudge, he is the perfect example of where this started. And it's a model that works for a lot of people. But we also believe you need good exclusive reporting that you're bringing to life too. So we have a team in Washington, D.C. Francesca Chambers sits in the White House every day and does the press briefings and is dealing with sources down there. We also have a whole entertainment division in Los Angeles, which is our showbiz team. And that's run by Natalie Trombetta, a fellow Australian. And she is fantastic. And she oversees all that celebrity content, those great photos. We have all of that. And then we've got our full newsroom in London, which has hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of employees. And that's for your great British news and your European stuff. And they're very, very good with that. And then in Sydney, Australia, we have a newsroom there, and that brings all the great Australian news. And a lot of news comes out of Australia, like so many of the stories.
There's a lot of great stuff happening there, too.
You know, we've got so many deadly creatures there that everyone in America seems to be obsessed with and thinks they're going to die if they go visit Australia. You won't. I can assure you, I've made it to 37 years of age and not ever encountered anything horrible. So you will be fine.
In England, you hear the word tabloid used with it. Does the word tabloid mean something different there than it does here? Because when we think of tabloid here, we tend to think of something more like the National Enquirer.
Yeah, and this is nothing like that.
Can we have like this discussion? Is that okay?
No. So tabloid actually refers to the shape of the newspaper, the size of the newspaper. That's what tabloid means. But I think we tell great stories. And we have great original reporting, and we're a great source. And so I say, call us what you want to call us, but just call us your primary news source. That's all I really care about. I mean, because we've got everything there. You're not going to find a website that has as much information and as much content. And we're not snobby when it comes to what we report on, because people love reading all different degrees of news. And we offer that. There is hard news. There's celebrity stories. There's health stories. You name it, we've got it. So I just think that you should just be calling it your primary news source.
Oh, wow. Okay, we're going to come back in a minute. I want to talk about, speaking of news, you guys have also had some pretty big news exclusives that have then been credited to Daily Mail. We'll talk about that right after this. Jeff, you ever done one of those like month challenges? You know what that is?
Mm-mm.
It's like where you do something or you don't do something for 30 days. Like, I won't eat sugar.
Trying to get, like, routines done.
Sometimes I have it, like, I'm not going to drink wine. Never done that one.
Never done that.
Nope, haven't done it. Well, I committed this month to leaving a review on other people's podcasts, since you and I are basically begging people to leave reviews on Dying to Ask.
Nice.
Because they're kind of a big deal.
How's that worked out so far?
Well, I'll tell you what. I was listening to Rebecca Jarvis's No Limits show, episode 101, and whose review did she read? Mine!
Yours.
I heard my name! I almost drove off the road. I was so excited. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to do our review of the week, and it comes from Kirk 2015. He gave us 5 stars and he wrote, made for a great treadmill escape. And as a runner, I'm humbled by that.
Nice.
So what are we now asking people to do for us?
To leave reviews.
Pay it forward.
And rate us.
Rate us. Very important. Let me tell you about one of my pet peeves in news. I will hear from viewers, why are you putting this on social media? You should be covering, say, immigration. Why aren't you talking about this instead of talking about what you had for breakfast on social media? Let me tell you something. If I put an immigration story on social media, nobody will pay attention. If I put a picture of, you know, my dog just ate my cookie, blows up. So I always say, like, there is news that you want to know, news you need to know, and then there's news that people actually want to consume. And we have the analytics now at a TV station, at a newspaper, to be able to tell you what people are actually looking at. So
dog
what are
stories.
You seeing? Dog stories. Just lots dog of dog stories. What are you seeing?
Absolutely. I mean, I agree with that wholeheartedly. People really want to consume news that they like, and they'll say that they want the hardest news stories. But I can tell you, when you look at the analytics, people are interested. Yeah, they'll look at those stories, absolutely. But what they really want to see is, what is a Kardashian doing? What's happening on The Real Housewives of New York City? Oh my God, look at these photos of this celebrity going to get their groceries. Like, people like those stories.
She used paper bags. How could she do that?
Exactly. Like, people like those stories. And I think that the great thing about our website is we'll give you the hard news stories at dailymail.com, but we'll also give you the fun celebrity stories too that people want to read. And I think people have an appetite for both, but it's like dessert. You're always going to favor dessert over the main course. Like, It's human nature, and so and people will tell you in focus groups and studies, oh, I want like the hard, no holds barred reporting. But when you actually see what they're consuming, we know that that's not the case.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and I think that we have to. You pull people in with some things that you just enjoy, but then you stick around to get the stuff that you need.
Exactly.
Like the important stuff. So how does White House stuff play for you guys? How does politics play? I mean, certainly politics is entertaining these days. There's a lot to see.
Politics does really well. I mean, I think people are very interested in what's happening in Washington, D.C. And I think we operate in three big markets, the UK, the US, and Australia. And all of the political stories coming out of those countries are really of interest to the readers in those countries. And they cannot get enough of it. And I know that if you were to take a look at our homepage right now, you would see a huge proportion of stories on the left-hand side of the page are political stories, whether that's about President Trump, his administration, the Democrats, the midterms that are coming up. There are a lot of stories because I think a lot of people in America and around the world are interested to see how this administration will play out and what impact that will have on their lives.
I'm just curious, being Australian, living in America, what is your view on like American politics and how does the rest of the world view current American politics?
Well, I think America is and will be the world's superpower. So what America does impacts the rest of the world. And I think that we're in an interesting point in history where so many people are involved and consumed in this political era. And I think it's amazing being able to kind of have a front seat to history and see this all unfold. And I think the great thing about Daily Mail is if you look at the website, you would not know if we had a political bias towards it because we cover it, good, bad, ugly. A story is a story for us, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. So people can go on the site and accuse us of being too left, or they can go on the site and accuse us of being too right. And we kind of like that you don't know, because we feel we have an obligation to our audience to tell them the stories as we see them, and then our audience can make up their mind with what they want to do. And I know it's the same thing that
it's
you
exactly
do each day.
The same. No, I mean, if you are equally offending people, that's a good day. It really is. No, like if I get one email saying I can't believe you said that, and then the flip comes in, I'm like, okay, I'm good.
No, absolutely,
and that's
what it is. And I think that people now see the world through their own sphere. That's how they see the world, and they want stories that they relate to, and not always anymore stories that make you think about everything. And we want to give people the opportunity to think about everything. So if the left is doing something great, we'll cover that. If the right is doing something great, we'll cover that. But equally, if both are doing something terrible, we're covering that too. Like, you're going to get everything. And that's what I like about us, is we're not sitting there any day with any sort of ideologies going, this is what we want. This is not how we report. So I'm happy with that.
You guys have broken some big stories in the last couple of years that I've seen major networks, some of the more like traditional news sources, then crediting to you. One of the biggest ones had to do with Anthony Weiner.
That's correct. I mean, we broke the story that Anthony Weiner was sexting, as they call it, with an underage girl. And that story came to us. We worked on it for about 2 months. And then when we had everything correct, we broke that story. And it resulted in James Comey reopening the email investigation into Hillary Clinton, if you recall. It also sent Anthony Weiner to jail. So he's currently sitting in a penitentiary right now because of that story. It was correct. He commented on the record to us in that story. So it was a story that had a huge, huge implications, and I'm glad we broke that story. I mean, and hopefully he's learned his lesson now and won't ever be doing that again.
So quite likely right below that story was something related to a Real Housewife, which is kind of the yin and the yang.
To the right rail is where we have our housewives. So, but they, we balance it. So the left-hand side of the page is all of your big news stories, and the right-hand side of the page is your celebrity. We call it the right rail.
And so when it comes to the celebrity stuff, how does that work?
You know, we get tips. We have photo agencies that provide us with photos. Stars post so much on their social media these days, which is like a constant source of entertainment. I mean, remember the old days you had to request interviews and you'd get like a smidgen of access. Now they want to show you everything online. So if you want to see it all in one place, you can come to the Daily Mail and we'll show you everything, because celebrities are very open with what they post on social media and we report on that.
There's so many of them who kind of put up that, you know, they want the privacy. I don't want paparazzi. I mean, how many of them in reality are actually coming to you and saying, hey, like, here's what I'd like to do a story about, or this is where I'm going to be?
There's an element of that, but it's more that they're out and about, so you can see these things. And there are some celebrities that are very private that don't show photos of their children. And so you'll often see on our website those celebrities, if they're out with their children, their faces are masked because they've taken a private approach to their children. But if your children are on a red carpet with you, then they're going to be covered. Yeah.
I watch on your social media feed, I see you with a lot of Real Housewives. Is that kind of the surreal part of what you're doing right now? Tell us some behind-the-scenes stories of what that's been like.
You know, it's interesting. When I came to Daily Mail...
I called you one day in your office. You're like, oh, I got Ramona Singer sitting outside my office right now.
That was right. Ramona was coming in for a Facebook Live interview with us.
So that's right.
She's very friendly. I really like Ramona. I've got to say that. We actually live on the same street. We live on the same street in New York City. So I see her out and about on the street quite frequently. But... what happened was Daily Mail covers all of these people, and every year we do this huge holiday party in New York City. And I was like, well, why don't we invite some of the people that we covered? And I'm like, we're in New York. Like, we should invite the Real Housewives of New York City. So over the years, I've seen like Bethany Frankel at our events, Ramona Singer, the Countess, Dorinda Medley, Sonia Morgan. Like, they all drop by and they're all like great to work with. And I can tell you that when one of our advertising clients or someone on the street sees like a huge A-list celebrity, or they see a Real Housewife, they will run for the Real Housewife. Like, I've got to tell you, people say they may not like them, but they love them. Like, when you can see in analytics what people like, they like Real Housewives.
What does that tell you?
You know, I think people can relate to these people. I think they relate to them because they see them in their element, in their home lives, in how they live on television. So they feel they have this intimate connection with them because they've seen them so publicly live their lives. And I feel that they think that they're their friends or that they know them because they know so much about them. And so people are obsessed. People are obsessed. And you know what? They're all really nice. Like, I think that they're great. And my wife always laughs about it because she's like, can you remember when we were in Sydney and I'd be watching the show and you'd come in and we'd like talk about, oh, look at that, look at this, whatever. She's like, and now we see them like in the wild. Like, it's
the wild in New York City.
Yeah, it's like surreal. And they're always lovely and friendly and approachable, and our readers love reading about them, and I have nothing bad to say about them. I mean, we had a party at the People's Choice Awards, when was it? January of 2016, and we invited Lisa Vanderpump and her husband Ken, and they came along and they were lovely. And we actually ended up adopting a dog from Vanderpump Dogs. The dog came from the mean streets of Beverly Hills and now lives with us in Manhattan. And she's lovely. And she's like, the last time we were this happy was when our youngest child, Hugo, was born, because she's our daughter we never had. So they're great. And I just think that they're fun to have on the website. They're fun to have come to our parties. And they know how things work. And it's just great to work with them.
Do you sometimes just pinch yourself, though, that this is kind of your life? This kind of, I mean, like, it's all of it is so random. And yet it all kind of makes sense when you put it together.
It all makes sense. Like, and I think that I love my job. I really love my job, and I love what the job entails and what I get to do every day. And the website is just a fantastic place to work. And I mean, I've been there since July of 2014. Before that, I worked for them in Australia for about a year and a half. So we're at 5.5 years now, and I don't want to be anywhere else. Like, I love it. I love working there. I love my boss, Martin Clark, who created this product. I mean, he's a genius when it comes to taking something that was a traditional newspaper in Britain and turning it into the most read newspaper website in the world. There's a lot of respect that goes out for that, because that's a huge task to do, and then launch it in another market that wasn't familiar with it. And now you've got fantastic shows like The Today Show or Nightly News or Good Morning America quoting your reporting because of what we're doing. And that, to me, I think is a badge of honor. And I think it goes back to him and what he's achieved.
In addition to loving your job, you love your family. I want to talk to you about what it's like to be Australian living in America these days. We'll do that right after this. It takes a special kind of person to do morning news, don't you think?
I think so.
And by special, I mean not right.
Yeah, there's definitely something crazy about all of us.
All of us. We love getting up in the middle of the night. We love starting the day really early. The news goes on at 4 a.m. now. 4 a.m. to 9 a.m. 5 hours of news.
That's a long time.
That is a very long time. You know how much time that is? 300 minutes.
That's a lot of minutes.
18,000 seconds.
That's a lot of seconds.
That's a lot of seconds. It's a lot of information.
Gonna start singing Rent right now?
I might. That is where I got the idea. That's a lot of news. That's a lot of weather. That's a lot of traffic. It's a lot of fun.
At 4 in the morning.
At 4 in the morning. And it all starts in the middle of the night. Join us. Was it a hard decision to bring the family to the U.S.?
You know, we are very, very lucky to have been born in Australia, which is like a beautiful, wonderful country. That's like a dream country, I call it. And we were very happy living in Sydney, and we had a great life.
Everyone's happy in Sydney.
Everyone's happy in Sydney.
It's a beautiful. Unless you're getting attacked by animals.
Unless the animals are coming after you.
No one's getting attacked by animals in Sydney, I can assure you. Kangaroos are not hopping across the street, and no one has a koala in a tree.
Yeah, but kangaroos are not nice.
They're not nice. Like, I have a scar, like, here from where I was attacked by a kangaroo outside my grandmother's house, which is about 6 hours south of Sydney. When my grandmother was alive, they used to have kangaroos that would be on the front lawn of their property. And I was out jogging once, and a long time ago, and the kangaroo kind of got in my way and gave me a little bit of a brush up. So, I mean, these things happen, but I've got a little mark
these
on my elbow.
Happen. They don't happen here, Sean. Tell you that.
Yeah, but you could get attacked by a bear in Tahoe or...
That's true.
These things do happen.
We like have our things.
I'd rather see a kangaroo than a bear approach me. I think I'd rather take the kangaroo.
I'd rather see the bear and the kangaroo guy.
Like, we only get raccoons out here.
If that happens, you will see it on dailymail.com.
I'm sure you will. I need the exclusive.
Yeah, you need the bear versus the kangaroo. You will see it on dailymail.com. I can assure you.
So when it came time, you know, when you get this opportunity, because I think what we're kind of dying to ask you about is that, you know, you've always had these really like big career dreams and you've achieved them. So when that dream job comes up, you have children and a wife who I know is a successful lawyer back in Sydney, like that's a big leap to say, let's just go.
It's a huge leap. Like we had a very comfortable life there and your family's there. Like my wife's parents are on the Gold Coast. My parents are in Sydney. We were very settled. And so this opportunity kind of came out of left field and we talked about it as a family and we decided we'd do it. And I think I'll be forever grateful to my wife because she gave up the most in moving here because she was a very successful attorney in Sydney. And when we moved here for the first couple of years, she set up our life. Like you've got to think about it that you have to find a new home. You have to find new doctors, dentists. You have to work out where you grocery shop, how you pay the power bill. Like all of these things are completely different to how you would do things in Sydney, where your kids go to school. And in Manhattan, where you live determines where your kids go to school. And so it was finding all of that stuff. And I hit the ground running with my job and Emma hit the ground running setting up our life. For the first 2 years, she set up our life. And she has made our life what it is now because of what she did for us in the early days. She's now back working and is loving every second of being back working in New York City. But it was a big adjustment to get all of that done. And I'll be really frank, the person who was the champion in our house that did that was my wife, Emma. It wasn't me. I was working nonstop. She was the one getting our life in order, making sure our kids were settled. Mm-hmm. And it timed well for us with our kids because my son was just about to enter kindergarten. And so he started kindergarten in a new country at a brand new school that he'd never attended before and didn't know anyone. And he adapted. And I have to say, Americans are brilliant and friendly and kind and gracious, and they welcome you into their homes for the holidays. The experience I had here back in 2001 with how you welcomed me into your home, how our colleagues out here welcomed me into their homes, I said to my wife when we moved, know that when you move to America, Americans are gracious, wonderful people that will invite you into their lives. And that is exactly what happened when we moved to New York. So I was thankful for that experience all those years ago because it prepared me when we came back for how great people would be and the wonderful friends we've made in New York City.
Yeah.
It's the same. Americans are good people. So I really love that.
You should spread the word on that.
It's true though. Like I don't care what anyone says. I think Americans are great, and we love living in America. We think that people are great, and I think, like, we've just spent 3 days in Tahoe. I mean, and that is like God's country. It like is. You feel like how special this country is when you're swimming in Lake Tahoe. It's just a great place to live, and so people welcomed us.
Though, there's some stuff that I know that we're considered kind of unusual for. So as an Australian coming here, like, what are the things that we do that you're just like, why did they do that?
Oh, the DMV. Why did they do that? That would be my only concern. And I'm sure every American shares my view on lining up at the DMV.
Yeah. Again, Australia, US on the same point on that.
I just pack a picnic and head on in. And by the time you finish the picnic basket, you're called to the desk. So I don't know. I'm just trying to think I think use of words is different. Certain words that Americans use or describe things are not words we'd use in Australia.
No. Like, you used one there to describe your wife, Emma. She's the champion of our house. I love that.
She is. She's the...
In Australia, you'd walk down, hey, champion, how are you doing? it's the ultimate.
She's the champion of our household.
Do we have any words that the same way, like if we would use them in conversation, you would probably repeat them and say, oh, that's funny that they say that?
I always laugh at you calling it a fanny pack, because it is not what you would call it in Australia. Fanny has a different definition. Yeah. Just head on over to urbandictionary.com and you'll take a look at what that means. So
it's do a Daily Mail story.
There's words like that. And you'd never root for your team. Like, you go to Urban Dictionary again and type in what that word means. Like, there's a few things that always, like, surprise me when people are saying I'm doing this. And I'm like, oh, nice.
Nice, champion.
Yeah. Nice one.
How about your kids? Your kids are like little American boys now.
My kids are American. I mean, and people say to you, like, are you concerned that your children sound American? And I'm like, no, we chose to move here. Mm-hmm. We chose to send our kids to an American school and be educated by Americans and attend class around Americans. So surprise, surprise, they sound American. Like, both of my boys.
You don't send them to school with Vegemite?
No, we have when, sorry, but their lunch won't be eaten by anybody else.
That'll do that.
And that'll do that trick, I tell you. But and they love Vegemite. I have to say, they love Vegemite, but they do not sound Australian anymore. They sound American. And, like, our parents get a kick out of it, because my wife was the child of migrants in Australia. Her parents moved from the United Kingdom, and her parents sound very, very British still. They claim they don't. They sound totally regal. Yeah. My parents sound very Australian. And so our children, and my wife sounds very Australian. So you always think when you have kids, they're going to sound like you. My kids sound nothing like me. They think we have an accent. So at school, they call themselves Australian Americans. Aww. So when they're asked, when they go around the class, where are you from? My boys will always say, we're Australian Americans. And so everyone loves that. And now both children have lived in America longer than they lived in Australia. So, but we try and go back every year. Our parents come across every year. And so for our parents, it's been great too, because they get to come to New York City. And
they're worse places great time. To go visit. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, who doesn't want to go visit New York City? So our friends come visit, and we just enjoy it. We enjoy it a lot. We're very thankful for the life that we have.
So I'm the child of immigrants too. And so my parents always had this idea when I was growing up of when they would go back home. And until the day my father died, home was always Ireland.
Yes.
Like, whenever we talk about home, that's really what he meant. And there was always kind of like that idea, when are we going back home? Do you guys think about that? Do you talk about that?
Yeah, we call it home.
When you're doing the kind of thing you're doing?
You do, but I kind of take a more holistic approach to it, in that we're lucky we have two homes. Mm-hmm. So we have two homes. So we have a wonderful home in Australia, but we also have a fantastic home in New York City. And so we have the best of both. And when you get those pangs that you want to go home, you can go home. You can go and visit your parents. You can see your friends. And we'll always have two homes. But yeah, we call it home. Of course, you call it home. That's where you're born. I think wherever you're born is, that will always, your birthplace will always be in your heart. But you also have the home you chose. And we're really thankful to have that home in New York too. And as I said, we love Americans. We love America. So we're lucky we have both. And so if ever anyone has something to say about America, you'll know this is the Australian who's the first to stand up for America. So I love it.
One of my favorite things about Australians is that everywhere I went, people were funny. Like, I didn't meet anybody in Australia who was not funny, which is not, I think, true of this country.
Well, I don't think you met a few of the teachers I had at Catholic school when I was growing up. Well, I think they would defy those odds, Deirdre.
Other things at play in that school, let's be honest. But I think as a whole, I found Australians to be of a certain kind of nature. I don't know. Is that stereotypical?
They're easygoing. Everything's no worries. Like, it's Australians are great people. Like, great. They're
people
like American.
No worries when it should most definitely be worry. There should be a lot of worry, but people are like, no worries.
There is a crocodile on your front lawn. No worries. We'll sort it out. Like, everything will be okay. Everything will be okay. So, no, Australians are great people, and Australians love Americans. That's the other thing. Like, I can tell you that every time America goes to war, Australia is right there beside you.
We really are. We appreciate that.
We really are. Like, we are loyal friends and neighbors. We share an ocean in the Pacific. So whenever I come to California, I look across and I think that my other home is on the other side of that big mass of water. And so I think Australians are fun.
Where your little dog came from in Beverly Hills.
exactly. Little Rose. But no, it's Australians are really great people. And I think that any American who wants to do a bucket trip holiday has to go visit Australia. Like, you can't live your life without going to Australia, because it is simply a special place with great people, great food and scenery like you'll see nowhere else on this planet. And I think that everyone should get to Australia at least once in their life. And I can tell you, when you go, you want to go back.
And you should really call Sean before you go, because he'll hook you up.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
We need to wrap this up. So the thing we want to leave with is your advice for somebody who has big dreams, big goals, career, lifestyle, whatever. You are somebody who has like no fear. You just go and you do it. So what's your advice to people about taking chances?
Well, there's always fear and there's always nerves, but I think you have to work hard. And I think if you work really, really hard, people will take notice and they will give you opportunities. And don't ever think that anyone does this by themselves. There are a lot of people over my career that I can credit for giving me opportunities to move to that next level or take up another exciting opportunity. And I think you've always got to realize that you will never do this alone. So work hard and work with great people, and always be genuine and honest and loyal. And I think that will always pay huge dividends. Like, don't use people to get ahead. Work with people, have like great friendships with people, really get involved in your job, be the first one there, be the last one to leave. Know that nothing is beneath you. Like, there is no task in any organization that is beneath you. I once worked at a company where I got scolded by someone, an executive, for showing the intern how to hang a poster on the wall. That's something that's beneath you. And that's when I knew I needed to leave that company.
Wow.
Because nothing is beneath you, and you all play a part in an organization. And if you work hard and you're open to doing everything, then you will see that your career will grow. And I think I look at our friendship started because we were both in Sydney at the Olympics working hard, and you took a chance on me and said, why don't you come and intern for us? And it opened the door here for me in America that 17 years later, we're sitting here as friends talking about our careers and our life. And I think that is reflective of how, when you're at work, always be nice to everyone, always work hard, always do the right thing, and things will work out for you.
Well, you're extraordinarily loyal. You nurture friendships like really no one else I know. And I think that's one of your greatest qualities, is that you're very sincere in your interactions with people. So I am not surprised at all that you're as successful as you are.
That's really kind. And look, I never look at it that it's success. I think that we're all just working hard. We all just want to provide for our families. We all just want to do well in life and have a nice life. And I think that's what we work for. And I think that you should treat people how you want to be treated. And I'm also, I respect people who work hard. And so if I see other people in the office, no matter how hard they work, like what role they have, as long as they're working hard and giving their all, you'll always have my respect and loyalty. And that's how I operate. And that's why I really respect Martin Clark, who runs the Daily Mail, because no one works harder than him. I mean, he works nonstop. And I mean, he is the reason this website is so successful. And that's why I like working where I work, because I work for someone who works very hard. And I mean, you can both relate to working at places where the person who you work for does not work very hard. And you know that you've seen it through your career. And it's always refreshing when you work for someone who works harder than you do.
Well, congratulations on everything you've accomplished. Life in America. And keep that right rail coming, because I waste hours and hours scrolling through it.
I love it. And I'm thankful for everyone who visits dailymail.com. And I'm really thankful for being back here today. It's so great after 17 years to be back here and to be talking to you. Well, thank you both.
You have not changed a lick. That is for sure.
I think there's about 30 pounds difference. But other than that, yeah.
We won't even go there. All right. Tell us how we can keep up with Daily Mail and with you.
Great. So you can visit dailymail.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's always changing, so make sure you go there. We have a fantastic TV show that Daily Mail produces with Dr. Phil and his team at Stage 29 Productions, and it's on right across America, and you can find showtimes at dailymailtv.com. Type in your local area and it'll show you where it airs, and it's a great show that airs Monday through Friday for an hour each day.
All right. Can we follow you on Instagram? Because it is fun to see pictures of your, you know, Real Housewife dog.
You know what? My Instagram I keep for just family and friends, but on Twitter, you can follow me on Twitter at Sean_P_Walsh. There you go.
Excellent. Sean, thanks. Great seeing you.
Great to see you guys too. Thank you.
It's kind of a bundle of energy, isn't he?
Oh yeah. Super high energy.
Can you imagine having him as an intern in your car with you?
I could not. No. Every intern I've ever worked with before has been super quiet.
No, not Aussie Sean. I'll tell you who hasn't been quiet. People who are listening to the Dying to Ask podcast, we have a great new review. I love this one. This came from JHT4401, says, a fresh and fabulous podcast feels like having a chat with a BFF who's funny, smart, and totally in the know. I think he's talking about you. Can't wait for a new episode every single day. Every day? Ooh. Daily podcast?
That'd be a lot.
Could we do that?
I think we could. We might die in the process.
Yeah, well, dying. Dying. Get
no
it?
No pun intended.
All right. Thanks for listening today. We would love you to review the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. Please leave Jeff, your BFF, 5 stars. It is his favorite number. Let's see if you really learned today. Ozzy, Ozzy, Ozzy!
Oi, oi, oi!
See you next time.